Thank you.
Yud Aleph Nissan, Tuesday the 3rd of April, Rabbi Malcolm Herman, Haggadah Insights.
Begin by looking at the inyan of Maschil B'Gios and Messiah Mishabach, and then hopefully broaden it out to other ideas and some ideas to share at Seder night as well. So, and actually initially I'm going to base my ideas on two Sforim. One is the Sefer Gioni Halacha by Rav Mirsky, and the second one is the Sefer the Imre Shefer, which is the Tziv on the Haggadah. A wonderful shout from the Kushim and Haggadah. So Gemara says in Kufta Zayin, Mishnah Kufta Zayin, and Pesachim, Avra Pesachim, Moshin lo kosh sheni, that you pour out the second cup of wine, Makana ben Shon, and the child asks, Aviv, ve'im ein das, ben Aviv melamdo, and if the child does not have the requisite knowledge to ask, the father teaches him, Manish Tana, and the Mishnah talks us through Manish Tana, in the slightly different gerus that they had in those days, with reference to Korban Pesach. Then he goes on to say, then it begins with the degradation, and we then end with the praise of the elevation. That's how the Mishnah finishes. And then you darsha, then you expound, until you finish the whole parsha. And actually, Pashtus, although there is some discussion about it, that very last part of the Mishnah is not part of Maschil B'Gios M'Shal Mishpach, is actually what the sequence. So in essence, in this particular Mishnah, we have three particular stages of the Seder. You have stage of teaching the son, Aviv Malandre, and then you've got the stage of Maschil B'Gios, the whole concept of Magid, where you begin with a degradation and then move upwards. And then you've got Arami Avidavi, the Hemshuch of the Magid. As I say, there's a machlokus about that last part, and but that's not what we're going into today. And then the Gemara says as follows. Gemara Kufta Zayin Aleph at the bottom of the page. Master Gnus Masai Mishvach. My Gnus, what is Gnus? Rav Amar, Rav says, Midchila over the Avodis Kalunim Hayavasenim. That the Gnus is the parable from Haggadah that focuses on the fact that originally our ancestors were over the Avodah Zorah, they were idol worshippers. Shmuel says, no, Avodah Meyinu. That's where the Gnus starts. In fact, as seen in the Rishonim, there's quite machlokus as to whether this is Rav and Shmuel, whether this is Abaye and Rava. There's three different versions as to how you actually said these statements, and that makes interesting issues in Halacha as well. And then the Gemara brings a maimer from Nachman, where it seems from Nachman paskened like Shmuel, that we say from Avodim Hayinu. That's the Gemara, the very well-known Gemara. So if I was to ask you, so who do we pasken like in our own recitation of the Haggadah, which view do we follow? Which view do we follow? Both. You could say both, or you could argue you say neither. Well, that will depend on what's pshat in the Gemara. Are they exclusive views? Was Rav saying, no, we say Midchila, we don't say Avodim Yinu? And Shmuel was saying, no, we say Avodim Yinu, we don't say Midchila. In which case, our Haggadah, it looks as though Haggadah would follow neither view, because neither view expounded the idea that we should say both. In fact, if you look at Rabbeinu Chananel on the side, and the Rif as well, the implication is that they were exclusive views. Because he says, brings the views, he says, for idna of dino kotravaya. Today we do like both. Today we do like both, which implies that originally that they were at odds. They were at odds. One said one and not the other. Today we do like both views. It doesn't suggest that, in other words, it doesn't suggest that they both hold of both paragraphs. The implication is they hold one and not the other. Today we now follow both. If it had been true, if the Rabbeinu Chananel had learnt that in fact they both say that you say both, then our inclusion of both would be consistent with both views. With either view, I should say, consistent with either view. In other words, if Rav said you say Avodah Meyinu and Midchila, and Shmuel said the same thing, then in fact our view would be consistent with either view. Okay, but over here, Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rif, the implication is the way they learned the Gemara is that these were exclusive views. Rav said one and not the other, and vice versa. And today we accommodate both separate views. We incorporate both separate views. But originally there was a machlokus and one and not the other. Now, there are several problems with this, as the Aginah Halacha brings. Of course, the first problem is that if we learn the Rav holds that you say Menchila not Avodah Meyunu, but the Torah says we should say Avodah Meyunu. In the response to the child, the Torah says we say the paragraph Avodah Meyunu. That's number one. Secondly, if you have the Girsa, if you have the Girsa of Rav and Shmuel, then the Halacha over here would be more inclined to passing like Rav, as the Nitziv points out. Because although in Momenos you pass like Shmuel, in Nisiv Hatz you pass like Rav. So if it's true that it's a machlokus between them, you would expect that the Pesach is not that we say both, but we come down on the side of Rav, as you would anticipate in a machlokus such as this. So various issues in terms of if those two views are exclusive, if those two views exclude each other. So therefore, let me share with you the Nitziv actually learns, as do others, and actually really it's based on the Ritva. The Ritva says that there's not a machlokus about whether you include both paragraphs. Both views say that you include both paragraphs in the Haggadah. Of that there is no question at all. Machlokus is the emphasis. Machlokus is the emphasis of the Sipur. What's the emphasis of the Sipur? So Ritva says there's no shadow about it, you include both views. The question is where do you start from? Or the question is what's the emphasis of the Sipur? Then the Nitziv puts it in these terms. The Nitziv says actually the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel over here is really a machlokus about Pshat in our Mishnah. It's about Pshat in the Mishnah. And if you look at the Mishnah again, which is why I started off that way, and it's about the sequences in the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says as follows, again, the Mishnah says there are really three stages. Stage number one is Aviv Malamdo, that engagement with the next generation, with the child. Stage number two is Mas Hilbegnus, and stage number three is Arami Avidovi. The Shaila is, what point does the Aviv Malamdo stop? Where does that stop? And where does Maschil Begnos begin? Where does that stop? Where does one stage begin and where does one stage start? That's Machlokus Rav and Shmuel. Rav maintains that actually from Manishtana, the end of Manishtama, all the way up to Menchila, is all to do with Magid Aviv Malamdo. It's all to do with the father teaching the son. We don't even begin, if you like, the personal narration of Magid until Menchila. And that's how Rav learns Peshat in the Mishnah. Peshat in the Mishnah is, when it says Aviv Malamdo, the child asks the questions, and you engage the child in the answer. And as the Tzid puts it, the Haggadah then explains to you, educates us as to how to engage the children with a Avodah Meyunu, with the four different sons, with the four different styles, with each one Chanoch and Arapi Dariko. That's all part of Aviv Malamdo. Until you finish that, you haven't begun the Sipur Tzid Hashem. So Rav's view is, of course you say Avodah Meyunu. Of that there is no question at all. But it belongs to the chelik of Aviv Malamdo rather than the chelik of Pesach Sipur Yisrael. And Shmuel disagrees. The truth is that the way that Nitziv puts it, Shmuel, I'm reading out one line of the Nitziv, but he says as follows. Shmuel says, "V'nei tshuva hi kodem shamaskel avon meyinu." To be honest, I'm not sure what to make of that line. "Tshuva hi kodem shamaskel avon meyinu." Suggestion is welcome. Almost as they say that you have managed Tana, and then you yourself got to answer. We've got an answer. And then Avodah Meyunu is Maschil Begnos. Any suggestions on that line? Kodim Shem Maschil Avodah Meyunu. Anybody? Shmuel Svele Reche Shubha Hi Kodim Shem Maschil Avodah Meyunu. It's even before that, Avodah Meyunu. And then you go on to Avodah Meyunu, which is Maschil Begnos in Samishvach. The truth is that the Malbim says something very similar.
But the comment elsewhere. Shubha Hi Kodim. First thing you do is answer the questions.
Right.
Maschil Avodah Meyunu.
This is Shem Maschil Avodah Meyunu. You mean it should be a Tshuva Kodim, and then Maschil Avodah Meyunu. So, whereas the Tshuva means...
This is how you do the Tshuva. This is how you answer the question.
I see. I'm sorry, I see. Shmuel Svele, does Tshuva Hi Kodim?
I don't know, it doesn't work really.
Not yet. Still a different Russian. Yeah. Who said Tshuva Hi Shem Maschil Avodah Meyunu? Not sure. Anyway, but the Malbus is a very similar type of thing, that really the machlokes between them is, again, as I said, not whether you include both paragraphs, but the machlokes is, in fact, whether this chelik is part of the Sipur rather than otherwise. I can't resist sharing with you a very interesting thing that the Haginah Halacha brings, which is a dig in the Rambam, because it's very interesting. The Rambam himself, and the Rambam brings, the Tzorcha Haskel Begnos Messiah Mishvah. So Rambam says you start, as we expect, Keter Maschilu Masapesh Bechilu Hoiva Besinim Meterach. So you begin and you start. Our ancestors worship Avodah Zorah. And then it says, Messiah Medvara Emesh, Shekavanu HaMakom Lo. V'chein Maschil Modiya Shavodah Meyunu L'Fan Mitzrayim. And then you begin and you say, Modiya Avodah Meyunu L'Fan Mitzrayim. That's how the Rambam puts it. So when the Rambam brings it, Rambam brings that you say both, but the sequence is not as we have it. The sequence seems to be that first you start off with Midchila, and then Maschilam Medea, Shavat Aminu, Fahim Israel. Very strange. So he suggests as follows, that actually if we look at the Rambam, maybe the Rambam is intimating there are two separate mitzvahs over here. One is Maschil Umasaper, and then Maschil Umodia. Maschil Umodia implies the engagement with somebody else. You are informing somebody else. It's informing someone else. So it's true, when the Rambam talks about Sipur Yisrael, he begins with your mitzvah of Sipur. So he's not saying this is the sequence of the Haggadah. He's highlighting there are two separate mitzvahs on the day. Your own personal mitzvah, which is Maschil Umasaper, to begin and to narrate. And then the separate mitzvah, Maschil Umodia. And that mitzvah belongs to the chelik of Aviv Malando rather than the chelik of personal Sipur Yisrael. So Rambam over here is not necessarily talking about the sequence of the Haggadah. He's talking about the two separate mitzvahs that a person has in terms of the night. One is your personal mitzvah Sipur, and the other one is your mitzvah Aviv Malando. It's a very interesting diuk in terms of if this is the case. Let's move on from halach, if you like, to some very important ideas as to why is it so important to Maschil Pagnos. What's the significance of beginning with a degradation? You know, why can't we go straight in? I often think, you know, it's a curious moshul, really. Imagine if you're speaking at a simcha of a good friend, and that good friend's had a checkered past. And you're invited to speak at the bar mitzvah or the chasna, and you say to your friend, you know, it's so nice to see you here at simcha. I remember when I came to visit you in such and such. I mean, you know, if you were a guest at that simcha, you'd be cringing. Don't say that now. Listen, this is a simcha, Baruch Hashem, talk about the simcha. Don't talk about the degradation. We have to start off, you know, once we were over there by the Zohar. What's the purpose of Maschil Pagnos? So I want to give you three different views on this, which are intrinsic to the whole concept. First view, Maharal is quite well known. The Maharal talks about the fact that, really, when we have contrasts, we accentuate. Contrasts always accentuate. When you come out from darkness into light, you appreciate the light. You accentuate. More than that, he says, this is derech ha'olam. This is the way the world works. Kadosh Baruch Hu could have created night that is darkest at its beginning. And then from its inception, then gets lighter until dawn. Hashem didn't. Hashem created the world such that the darkest moment is just before the dawn, just before the beginnings of a new day. That's the way Hashem created the world. Insofar as you can't achieve sublime madrigas initially, you've got to come through a process. So Maharal says really two things in this first part. First part is that's the nature of the world. But more than that, it's only when we've come through the degradation, there's a real clear appreciation of the elevation. Without that contrast, there's a chisoron in the actual appreciation of the elevation itself. Maharal also says, very interesting, that the purpose of Maschil Pagnos is to demonstrate that the salvation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not haphazard. He gives a moshul. Imagine you could have a response to a particular situation, which is the appropriate response, but it doesn't necessarily mean it was directed. You've got a house which is on fire, and it rains, and the waters extinguish the fire. Now, it happened to be very convenient that the waters extinguished the fire. There was no kavana in the rain, per se. On the other hand, if someone comes along with a hose and puts out the fire, then you can see that their action is purpose-directed. There was an appreciation of the issue to be resolved. Their action becomes purpose-directed. Says the Maharal, if we simply jumped in at the moment of Shvach, if we jumped in to the point of Hashem saved us from Mitzrayim, without focusing on the need for salvation, then that would not have demonstrated HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kavana in the whole process. It's only because we begin with the need, we focus on the degradation, we focus on the crisis and the tragedy of Klal Yisrael, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps in, that we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's action was not haphazard, we see it was directed, and that of course focuses on the uniqueness of the relationship between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the reason to focus on the Kanus is so that we should appreciate that the action of Kodesh Baruch Hu was directed, not haphazard. It wasn't random. He also has a very interesting idea, which if we have time we'll still elaborate on later on, that really, maybe the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, that it brings two options, machlokes and Rav and Shmuel. The one is the more obvious one, which is that really Rav is focusing on the spiritual collapse of Klal Yisrael. The spiritual collapse of Klal Yisrael, the collapse of Nefesh. And Shmuel focuses on the collapse of Guf. And the machlokes between them is which is worse. Of course, in many respects, we understand that Nefesh is worse, the spiritual collapse is worse, because it's more difficult to restore to it, and it goes to the spiritual core. On the other hand, the physical collapse is A, more visible, and B, he also says when it comes to collapse, associates itself more with the physical world, which is by definition transient and doesn't have a kiyum, doesn't have nitzkis. So machlokes between them is which was worse. Again, everyone agrees we say both, but which was worse? Where is our emphasis? Which is worse? Is our emphasis on the spiritual collapse with the significance of that, or the physical collapse? More visible, and in certain respects, collapse attaches itself more to the physical world, which is so transient. Let me share with you the view of the Netziv, a remarkable view of the Netziv. He says, maschil begnos is not so much about accentuating the Yeshua of Klal Yisrael, the salvation. It's even more than that. It's about justifying the shibud in the first place. He asks a kasha. Imagine someone breaks somebody else's leg. And then they heal the leg. Lo, the Gemara and Baba Kama says you're not obligated to take the offer of their services, kind that it might be, but you're not obligated to. But nonetheless, they heal your leg. And then they say, no, you ought to thank me for healing my leg. What do you mean? You broke my leg in the first place. Why should I thank you? He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into Mitzrayim in the first place. What does it mean that we spend so much on thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that? Says the Netziv, that actually if we understand where Klal Yisrael came from, then we understand that the Yetzias Mitzrayim, that Shibud Mitzrayim, was a critical and therapeutic process for the whole future of Klal Yisrael. The reality is that we came from Ovdei Avodah Zarah. That's a reality that we cannot escape from. It was only that the Avos who began to extract us from that culture. But had we not gone down to Mitzrayim, had we gone directly to Eretz Yisrael, says Netziv, Eretz Yisrael was a place where there were great dangers of Avodah Zarah, even more than other places. Because Eretz Yisrael was so dependent on climate for any success whatsoever, and therefore people were always searching for ways of influencing climate, it was a place where dangers were prevalent for Avodah Zarah. Had we gone directly from Yaakov Avinu to Eretz Yisrael, says Netziv, we would have fallen even worse than we did fall in Eretz Yisrael. Had we gone directly from Yaakov Avinu straight to Eretz Yisrael, without the therapeutic process, quote unquote, of Shibud Mitzrayim, then we would have been in even greater spiritual danger than we were when we finally got to Eretz Yisrael. And we were in enough danger there already. He says, but Shibud Mitzrayim demonstrated to Klal Yisrael.
Why should it say they fall deeper? Could be a sword.
So as I saw them in the Tziv, I can read it out to you if you like. I'll show it to you afterwards. It says it brings from Chazal that one of the reasons, even not Chazal, from Tanakh, one of the reasons why there was a certain reluctance of some of the Olei Bavel to come back from Bavel is because they were worried about the dangers of Avodah Zarah and Eretz Yisrael. So therefore he says we had to go down to Mitzrayim. We had to experience Avodah Zarah. We had to almost, as it were, put our trust in Avodah Zarah and see how that whole system collapsed and failed us and the country turned against us. And then, only then, once we've been through that process, were we then a people that were roy to come into Eretz Yisrael with the greater possibility of achieving what we had to achieve. Therefore, he says, Maschil Begnus is not a, he doesn't negate the other views, but his view is, it's not just about accentuating the Yeshua, it's about justifying the Shibud. It's about justifying the Shibud and understanding what the Shibud is all about. When you justify the Shibud, then we have an appreciation of what they're going to understand what the Gula is all about. The Nesiv HaShalom has many, many Mamorim on Pesach, and a very interesting approach to the whole, I mentioned previously last year, no doubt everyone remembers, that it's nice to live with some illusions, you know. But he says that he calls Pesach the Rosh Hashanah of Emunah. Rosh Hashanah of Emunah. This beautiful phrase, Chayv Yehudi Lahamin Shehu Ma'amin. Chayv Yehudi Lahamin Shehu Ma'amin. But he says that the Emunah of Yetzias Mitzrayim is a very interesting one. It's not just to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. But a chelik from the emunah, of the mitzvah of emunah, is to know that we are the Amar Nivcha, Asher Baruch Avanu. To know that we are the Amar Nivcha. And that's a chelik of the emunah of Klal Yisrael. So I think we mentioned last year as well, that's a very beautiful pshat to the famous kasha. Why is it Aseret Dibros launches with Asher Tzitzif from Eretz Yisrael, doesn't launch with Brias Olam, says the Nesiv HaShalom, because Brias Olam is universal. But Yetzias Mitzrayim was particular to Klal Yisrael. It was unique to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, a chelik of the mitzvah of emunah is to believe that we are the Amar Nivcha, that particular unique relationship that we have. So therefore, if we understand that, it's a very magnificent pshat as to why Maschil Begnus. When do we see our college parochials unadulterated, unconditional love for Kali Yisrael? Not when they're at their zenith, not when they're doing everything they should be doing, but when they're at their lowest point, when they're absolutely degraded in terms of where they're on their avodah. A kodesh baruch, at that point, Hashem still loves Klal Yisrael, still steps in for Klal Yisrael, still comes in to rescue us from Mitzrayim. That maskil benus is teaches us the unconditional love of a kodesh baruch to Klal Yisrael, and that's a chelik of the emunah of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what we have to understand. Very beautifully put. That's what we have to understand, and therefore we only see that because our God of focus. You know who we were? We were over the Avodah Zorah, we were steeped in Tumas Mitzrayim, and nonetheless, a Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out. Isn't that a beautiful pshat? Hashem Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out. Oh, now we understand Mitzrayim teaches us. It teaches us the unconditional love of Hashem for Klal Yisrael. If any touches up, Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, I can see we're going to run out of time if we go there as well, but in a similar way to the Maharal, but a very, very interesting way it says that. Let's move on, because I think it connects a little bit. He does say that Rav and Shmuel, again, are focusing whether the spiritual was more negative, whether the physical was more negative, which was more damaging. And of course, these two things, he also learns that these two things are tied together. As we know, the Gemara says, sometimes Klal Yisrael, the only pursuit of Edazorah is to be Mata Arroyos. These two things are sometimes tied. So he actually suggests the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel is, which was the Goru? Which came first? The behavior or the justification? Was it the rationale came first, the behavior followed suit, or the behavior followed came first, and then the justification? Could be Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Which brings us on to a very lovely mashal I'd like to share with you. I bought a new Haggadah this year. I don't normally buy new Haggadahs. I try and look at the ones that are on my shelf. So tempting always to buy new. I saw a very nice Haggadah translated from Hebrew called the Palace Gates Haggadah. It's very good if there are children around the table. It's got tremendous mashalim, very, very good mashalim. And this particular mashal is from the MS Yaakov, which he brings in the Haggadah about the Abrabonim. And it connects a little bit with this Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, according to the Siv HaShalom, as to which came first, the behavior or the rationale. So we all know the famous Kasha, the Rosh and the Chacham. There, in many respects, their Kasha appear to be similar. The answer to them is remarkably different. One is engaging, one is dismissing. So he brings a lovely mashal that there's a man who wanted to go and do some Yom Tov shopping, but he had very little to spend, and his wife sent him out to buy matzahs and wine. He goes out to the marketplace and he sees that his chaverim are buying cloth to make new clothes for Yom Tov, and his chaverim engage in conversation. New Yankum, where are you going? I'm going to buy matzahs and wine. No new clothes for Yom Tov? Come with us. There's a marketplace. There's a shuk. You can go and buy some stuff there. Buy some cloth. Your wife can make it into clothes. Let your family have something new for Yom Tov. Anyway, his friends get the better of him, and he's persuaded to go with them. Anyway, so and he comes home with his roll of cloth under his arm. And it's only when he reaches his front door that he perhaps recognizes that maybe his wife may not think that was such a clever idea. So he comes to the door. He doesn't record the exact conversation, but he comes to the door and his wife says to him, "Well, where's the matzahs and wine? What do you mean you bought cloth? We don't have matzahs and wine for Seder night. It's no point having cloth." And she says, "You better go and take it back." So I can't take it back. I've just bought it now. You go and take it back. So she says to me, "You know what?" And she looks at the cloth and she finds a small, tiny little mark on one of the rolls of cloth. She says, "No, it's faulty. Take it back." So he goes back to the shop and the shopkeeper's there, and he comes storming into the shop and he says, "I want a refund." He says, "And the goods are faulty. I want a refund," he says, "and the goods are faulty." So the shopkeeper, without any argument whatsoever, says, "Fine, here's your money back." And off he goes. A customer in the shop says to him, "Well, why did you give in so easy? It was such a minor defect. It was nothing. You could have replaced the cloth or repaired the defect." He says, "Did you hear how he asked it? He didn't say, 'Here's a problem with the goods. Can you do something about it?' He stormed in the shop and said, 'I want a refund. I want out of this. And the reason why I want out of this is because of this defect.'" He says, "Did you hear? That's what happened over here." She says, that's the difference between the Chacham and the Rosh. Yes, on paper they seem to ask a similar sort of question. What's going on over here? But look at the Chacham and look at the Rosh. Look at their personalities. Look at the way they're coming at it. One says, "I want out of here. And anyway, what is all this about?" The other one says, "Listen, I'd like to know what all this is about. I'd like to understand this." And therefore it's not just about the question, it's the way the question is put and who the question is that will tell you, are they looking for a response, are they looking for an engagement, or are they looking for an out? If they come forward and say, "I want a refund," and then, "By the way, what's this all about?" You know what the answer is. The answer is, "I'm not looking for a response." Actually, it brings, if you look in, it's very beautiful, from two psukim in Mishlei Chavov, the two responses, Shema Daled and Daled and Hey. You can look at after this if you like. Dan, two different responses and two different juxtaposed about how to answer the Ksil. In the first one, it says, Dan, answer, I'll tell the Ksil Bivalta. The second one says, Ane Ksil Bivalta. What does it mean? You do answer, you don't answer. It depends who the person is. Are they a person who wants to know but hasn't had the opportunity to learn, or they're a person who wants out and is not looking for any answers at all? I don't know. I never know whether there's a beautiful, beautiful maral, just to add some other ideas, on Dayenu. I don't know how well known it is, the beautiful maral, about the 15 sequences of Dayenu. Very, very beautiful, if you're not familiar with it. But anyway, he says that, actually, a very interesting, I always use it, say tonight, to engage those around the table, you know, to ask them significant numbers around the table. Everyone says 3, Matt says, everyone says 4, everyone says 10, but who will say 15? 15? 15 is a very significant number on Seder night. First of all, you've got the sequence of Seder. If you count Motzi and Matzah's too. So make sure if you're throwing this one out, they've all got the same Haggadah. But secondly, of course, we're on the 15th of the month. Nisan. We're on the 15th of Nisan. And then actually, there are 15 things in Dayenu for which we say thank you to Kodesh Baruch Hu. There are actually 14 Dayenus, but of course, the first one says thank you for two things. So there are 15 separate things in Dayenu. So Maharal explains that 15 always represents ascent. It always represents reaching a peak. That's why you have the Shehamana, the 15 steps. Of course, the moon is at its fullest on the 15th of the month. Kibakar Shem Mitzur Anomim, Yud and Hey. 15 always represents ascent. And that's why I said, but as Maharal explains, that it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim as expressed through Dayenu. So really, each one of these is a step, which is why it's called Kama Ma'alos Tovas. And look at these wonderful steps, or how many magnificent steps, because each one was a step. They weren't simply lumped in sequence, lumped together globally, each one was a step. And very briefly, he explains how they work in three stages. And he says that all Ruchnius growth works in three stages. You've got to have a launch, and then there is that process in the middle where you have to keep going and maintain it, and then there is that the climax and the consolidation of Dveikus. So the first five really focus on extracting us from Mitzrayim. The practicalities of pragmatics, let's get out of here. Extracting out from Mitzrayim. The second five focus on the Klal Yisrael's experience above Teva. So they understand about themselves, they are now a nation that can be the Milam and Teva. And the third five begin with Dveikus. Sorry, are all about Dveikus. Dveikus and Kodesh Baruch Hu. The climax, of course, being Bono Bilonos based on the Chira. And without going through all 15, but he shows how the first one of each one shows you this. Of course, the first one, in the Hotzion of Mitzrayim, simply the extraction. The first and the next five, which is Kolon Esayom, after Nothman Es Mamonam, which was part of the extraction, Kolon Esayom, he took us out of Mitzrayim, he split the sea for us. That's where we begin to see, in its ultimate sense, our ability to transcend Teva. The last five begin with Shabbos. The last five begin with Shabbos. So the sequence of Yetzias Mitzrayim, consolidation in the Midbar, learning to be go beyond Teva and then to Vegas. I'm just going to... He actually goes through all 15 and explains how each step was a step beyond the others, but I'm just going to share with you two final thoughts, if I may, very briefly. That is as follows. And the, just selecting now what comes to mind, so much more than one could say, but just two final thoughts. One is about the very interesting beginning of the Seder, Yachatz. I saw this once in the Haggadah of my father, Rabbi Nikolas Mishkovo, that at the beginning of the Seder, Yachatz, we split the middle mats into two. What does that represent? It's a beautiful thought. I don't remember the name of the Haggadah. It says that Yachatz reminds us when Yaakov Inu split the camp into two. Well, Yachatz says, Shnei Machanos. Says Rashi over there, says that if Esav comes to a Machana Achaz, says Rashi, Machanos is later Baal Korcha. You'll definitely escape. Definitely escape. So this Haggadah suggested that we split, that this represents, this Yachatz in the beginning of the Seder reminds us of that split. What was that split? That was the ultimate conflict between ourselves and Esav. And Machanesh Shalaf later, the two camps represent the Guf and the Neshama. Even if Esav can attack one camp, the other camp is impregnable. It's indestructible. When we split the matzah to the beginning of Seder, we hide half away. That half represents the neshama of the yid. The neshama of the yid has been indestructible. Over the years, the external has been destroyed, attacked, damaged, but the internal has never been destroyed and damaged. Very beautiful thought. I told this once to a chavra of mine. He said, it's interesting, at the end of the Seder, we bring out the that hidden half. And there's so many times the yidden who and the same do so much. They come out to a Seder night extracts, it brings out, draws out the hidden half, even if the world has damaged it. And one final thought, which we'll close with, but I saw a very lovely mashal. It's actually an episode, an anecdote brought by Shem Luchov Yitzchayim. He was once at a doctor's, and the doctor was a Yiddish doctor who started talking to him about Emunah, but in a quite a sceptical way, and questioning whether, is it really true, how Kadosh Baruch Hu created this and the other. So the Chavetz Chaim said to him, tell me, is it true that you're a doctor? Is it true you're a doctor? So the man goes to the wall, and he takes a certificate, and brings a certificate. And the Chavetz Chaim looks and says, what do you mean, this was dated 25 years ago? How do you know you're still a doctor? He says, well, that's how it works. You establish yourself as a doctor once, and then you establish yourself as a doctor to every patient. He says, the Chavetz Chaim, I know half the same thing. Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu established himself as a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and as the particular relationship with Hashem and Klal Yisrael. He doesn't need to establish it for every single patient. The certification is there, and that's there for the future as well.
Very nice. Thank you.